connecting to the AOC Podcast Network. Enjoy your stay.
This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people, places, and culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Today's guest is J.D. Regard, a native of New Iberia and chief nut officer of Cane River Pecan Company, which he took over from his parents when he left his corporate sales job with the Chicago Bears. Many of you also know J.D. as the author of a line of children's books, which started with Born to be a Tiger, which also spun off many other books commemorating family love of great football teams. There's a lot more to J.D., and I'm very excited to have you as a guest on today. So we're going to get into your background, J.D., and first of all, I want to thank you for making time to be here today.
Well, thank you, Jan. Thanks very much. And this is an exciting endeavor for you, and I'm just happy to be here and be a part
of
it.
You're one of our early guests. The purpose of this podcast is to really introduce people to Lafayette, Louisiana, and the surrounding areas, and the deep culture that we enjoy here. And I think you embody the spirit of Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And you also have a lot of things you do besides being the chief nut officer of your company. And so I'd like to get into that today. But if you can tell me your background and let people know more
about you. Absolutely. I'm a native of New Iberia, born and raised there. Went to the all-boys Catholic high school there, graduated 87, and actually left the state of Louisiana for a brief time. Went to Spring Hill College in Mobile, Alabama for 2 years. Mm-hmm. I thought I would stay there, but I really missed home and came back and finished college at LSU. And I had a great, great experience at LSU, loved it. And when I was at LSU, I had a very interesting job on campus. I worked for the men's basketball team, and I happened to be there the 3 years that Shaquille O'Neal was on the team.
Goodness.
So it was a very high profile time to be a part of the Tigers basketball staff. And it was my first glimpse into sports. And the reason I mention it is because I took a path in sports later after college. And I think that all was rooted in my experience with the LSU men's basketball team. Shaquille O'Neal was a star from the minute he stepped on campus. And he was a superstar. And we all knew it. And there was kind of a circus behind the scenes, you know, lots of media inquiries and people wanting to interview him and get to know him. And so I was exposed to all this sports stuff on the back end that I really enjoyed. So after I finished LSU, I kind of parked my sports career aspirations on the side, and I moved to Breckenridge, Colorado, where I was a ski instructor for 2 years.
If you can really?
Yeah, my family, a South Louisiana family who always fled Louisiana during Mardi Gras, we would go skiing in Colorado, and it was just happened to be a sport that I picked up relatively easy. Mm-hmm. And so I always said, when I graduate, I'm going to move out to Colorado for a couple of years and see if I can be a ski instructor. And I did it, and I lived in Breckenridge, and I taught at Keystone, and I taught for 2 years. And
what a great experience.
Oh, it was great. And then,
while you could do it,
even better than that, there was a couple from St. Martinville, Louisiana, who opened up a very successful Cajun restaurant in Breckenridge called Poirier's Cajun Cafe. And I worked for them. So I was a Louisiana boy working in a Cajun restaurant at night as the head bartender.
I
was a ski instructor during the day. I mean, it couldn't get any better than that.
That must have been a rowdy place.
It was. Yeah. The funniest thing was, whenever I would come down the hill to meet my class for the day when I was snow skiing, I'd tell them all that I was from Louisiana, and their faces were looking at me like, oh, we're going to learn nothing today.
I mean, because
what is a guy from Louisiana doing here teaching us how to ski? But anyway, did it for 2 years. I had a ball and skied a lot, met some great people, enjoyed teaching, really enjoyed working in the Cajun restaurant. You know, I would come home at the end of the day and have gumbo every night or etouffee.
And it was authentic. And it was just highly peppered.
It was. Yeah. It was really good food. Mm-hmm. So did that for a couple of years, and then I decided to go back to graduate school. And I went to Texas A&M University and loved A&M. I have to tell you, all three of my college stops, Spring Hill, LSU, Texas A&M, were all great experiences.
You were fortunate.
I was.
And they were fine schools.
And they were different schools, but they were all in the South. And so went to Texas, got my master's in education, and really was going to stay on my PhD track. And what happened was, I had heard about a hockey team that had moved to Lafayette, Louisiana, 1995. This, of course, was the Louisiana Ice Skaters hockey team, which was a double-A sort of minor league that started in Louisiana. And I had heard that they were building a staff. And going back to my LSU days, I kind of missed being in sports. And so I said, you know what? I can always go back for my PhD. Let me go ahead and see if I can get a job with these guys and move back to Lafayette. So I moved back to Lafayette. I get the job and I become the PR director. And my job is to go around the South Louisiana promoting hockey. Now, I've never seen a hockey game. Never in my life. And I'm in charge of going to radio stations and schools and civic organizations and television stations and talking about hockey. So finally, I went to the ownership and I said, look, I need to go see a hockey game. Like, this is ridiculous. And they sent me to all places. They sent me to South Carolina to go watch a hockey game. So I'm thinking I'm going to go to Toronto. Right. Maybe I'll go to New York, go to Buffalo, one of these really established hockey hotbeds of America.
Places, yeah.
Yeah, they sent me to South Carolina. So anyway, I had a great experience in Charleston, saw hockey for the first time, came back, thought I knew a few things, and went around Acadiana promoting hockey. And for those people who live in Lafayette, back in 1995 through 2000, the ice hockey team was a huge monster success. We outdrew the UL football team. I mean, we were drawing more people in an indoor hockey game than they could draw on an outdoor football game.
Who was the manager then?
Well, the general manager at the time were the Berrymans, Will Berryman and Dave Berryman. They were brothers from South Carolina, mm-hmm. and we had three local owners here in Acadiana. But 2 years after I went to work for the team, I left and went to work for a team in Mississippi in Biloxi. And then when I was in Biloxi, there was a management change here in Lafayette. And so they bought the Berrymans out, locals, mm-hmm. and they needed a new general manager. So they hired me to come back to Lafayette. So once again, I'm back in Lafayette. I'm like the perfect boomerang baby. I keep coming back.
Yeah.
And so I come back and I'm the general manager for about 4 years. And we did some wonderful things. We brought a couple of NHL exhibition games mm-hmm. to Louisiana for the first time. We brought the famed Stanley Cup, which is the trophy they give the National Hockey League champion every year, to Louisiana. It was a big deal bringing the Stanley Cup here. And we set attendance records. We had an all-star game. We did a lot of fun stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I decided to take a new job after that and go work for the Chicago Bears. It was a very unique opportunity.
And that's what I knew about. That was so exciting.
Yeah. So the Bears was cool. They had an opening there. And they had an opening in Jacksonville with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I chose which one I wanted. I interviewed with both. And I took the Chicago job. And pinched myself. I just mm-hmm. couldn't believe that this boy from New Iberia, Louisiana was working for the Chicago Bears. It was such a professional organization. You know, the National Football League is the pinnacle of sports. Right. And everyone you work with is so accomplished and comes from such great backgrounds. And I was fortunate to be there and loved it. And I would have stayed, but I had a chance to come back to Louisiana again. And my father had he had passed away about a year after I came back. To run our family pecan company that my dad and mom had started mm-hmm. back in the 80s or 70s.
This was about 2002.
Yeah, exactly. And so I came back, and I have been just thrilled to be home. I love working for myself, and I love building what we've built. And I love the fact that I'm part of a family legacy, and I kind of got the sports thing out of my system, mm-hmm. and I'm good with that. And I just love what I do. Right. I really, it's really obvious. Do. And I love being in Louisiana doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I could be a pecan owner in Alabama or Georgia or Texas, but here it's just something unique about our association and our love for food and how it's such a big part of our culture and our Southern lifestyle.
Right.
And pecans are so ubiquitous in the South. I mean, you know, everyone's got a pecan story. I run into so many people that mm-hmm. start their conversation with, we had a pecan tree.
Yeah,
you know,
pecans with my Aunt Pearl.
There you go.
Know, these stories. You know, but they're family memories.
Right. And someone made a great recipe for mm-hmm. a pie, or someone has a great praline recipe, and it goes on and on, and I love it. And
your story just makes me smile. I had you speak at a March meeting of Upper Lafayette, and we were in all, of all places, the Walnut Room.
That's right. That was hilarious.
The Petroleum Club, and I didn't see it, but you did.
Yes, I did. I meant to go back and change the name of that room. I was going to do it without John O. knowing
don't
about
they
it.
Have a pecan room?
Yeah,
here?
I don't think they do. Yeah, oh. Actually, they do.
Someone
that was funny.
Change the plates, but yeah. You live and breathe this. And yet, I think you could actually sell ice to an Eskimo.
Well,
I mean,
I
you are
it.
So.
You know, I love what I do.
Your personality is so vivacious. Well, it just makes people want to flock to you and find out what you're doing.
Well, it's been fun. You know, I think my family has a couple of bon vivants in it, and we like to do
it's hereditary.
Yeah, I get it honestly, and we like to tell stories, and it works in Louisiana. You know, Louisiana is a great storytelling state too, mm-hmm. whether we tell it. You know, in spoken word, or we tell it in song. You know, we love to be around other people, and it's real and sincere down here, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
as you know. But I've loved being in the pecan business, and we primarily our pecan company services a business to business clientele. Mm-hmm. We have a niche where we sell a lot of corporate gifting options to companies looking for corporate. Gifting products. However, we do sell year round, and we do sell to anyone. Mm-hmm. It just happens to be that happens to be our niche. So, but we've enjoyed the heck out of it, and we've got big plans for new things. And we're about to kick off the fall season. Our first catalog
right.
drops in September, which is
right.
next month, and we're excited about this coming season and what the future holds
right.
for us.
Right. Well, if yeah. anybody hasn't seen the website for Cane River Pecan, you can just Google that. Yeah. And it's a beautiful site, beautiful
Thank
photography.
Thank you.
And you're here because I met you as the Chief Nut Officer. I want to get in that title again. J.D. Regard's with us today as our guest. But that is just, I think, the symbol for all that you do. I mean, you're a family man. Very close with your family, your
yep,
beautiful wife,
kids.
Olivia, your yep. two children, and your company is your, I guess, your passport to the things you do in the community. So if we can talk about some of your activities here in yeah. the Lafayette area, what you give
well,
back.
Well, you know, at my age, I'm approaching 50, not quite there yet,
Young
48,
man.
48. But still, I'm at that age now where I think that, you know, giving back and what role can you play in your contribution to your community is important. Not everyone, you know, they say that this the three T's, I think, when you serve, you either have time or you have talent or you have treasure, right? Mm-hmm. And the treasure hasn't caught up with me yet, but I've got some time and some talent. So I try to lend it where I can. I serve on a few boards here in the Lafayette area. I serve on a board in New Iberia as well. I think I'm on like five or six boards right now. And I try to make as many of my board meetings as I possibly can. It's hard. I've got two young kids under the age of 12. And my wife is very active as well in the community and serves on a couple of boards as well. So we do what we can. You know, I think it's important. It also keeps me very plugged into the community. Mm-hmm. You know, honestly, I have a chance to work with some people and be around some people that otherwise I probably wouldn't. And that's also exciting for me. So the board service is important, mm-hmm. and I believe that when you're called, you know, it was funny, a few years ago, my first board I served on was a Catholic school board, and the group came to me and asked me if I would serve on a board, and my children were in public school.
I remember that.
And I thought, well, this is odd. Why do they want me to serve on a school board where my kids don't even go to school there? And one of the reasons they gave me was they said, you know, we need some outside perspective, and we mm-hmm. want somebody that's not so tied to the school. And I thought that was smart on their end. And so when my decision came to serve, I thought, you know, I need to serve in any capacity that I'm asked if I'm willing, if I have the time to do it. And so I thought it was a great chance to kind of get accustomed to what board service is. And the fact that my kids didn't go to school there didn't play in my mm-hmm. didn't really play in my decision to not do it. So the point I'm trying to make is that when you're asked to do something and you've got the time for service, you ought to really consider doing it because it's your way of giving back to your community.
Yeah.
You know,
and the connections you make. I served on that board too. I don't know if you want to yeah. mention some of your board service. But,
I'm on the DLU board here in Lafayette, and I'm on the Munkus Park mm-hmm. board, which is our new. Park that we're building
the
here in Lafayette,
is,
the whole
yeah,
horse farm, exactly. I'm on the board for the symphony here in mm-hmm. town, and I also I've served on some committees at the hospital, and so it's been a variety of things.
And those are important committees that enrich our whole community experience. And
well, any time of service is enriching. You know, I mean, that's the regardless if it's just committee service or if it's actual board service. It's all contributing as
right.
far as I'm concerned.
And you then know? You learn also, JD, about, you know, these budgets just don't magically appear. The dollars don't just walk in the door like people going, oh, I was driving by and I'd like to leave a check. It's a lot of work.
It is
serving
a lot of
on
work.
These boards
yeah.
and being a steward of, you know, our community's issues. So
I'm on the one
thank
of
you for all you do.
Well, thank you. Well, you're welcome. But I know you've served a lot as well, so you understand the service end of things. I'm on the One Acadiana board mm-hmm. here too as well, and that's been a great way to get a pulse of the community and right. the region as well. So right. it's been great. Yeah.
You do some other things too. I didn't realize until I did a little background check on you. You know, not a criminal check, but the service and the business check. I didn't realize you were managing owner of the Burby Lake Hunting Club in Lena, Louisiana, where you serve as lead guide, not just a guide, lead guide on wild alligator hunts conducted in September. So you're still here. So obviously you're a survivor.
Well, yeah, I'm a survivor.
And I'm scared of alligators.
I'm the lead guide, which only means I have to wash the dishes, drive the boat, and tell the jokes too. I've been doing corporate-led alligator hunts for about 16 years now. And we have literally had clients come to hunt with us from all over the country. It's been extremely rewarding. It's a chance to share our culture and the way of life that we have that's authentic mm-hmm. in Louisiana with people that have never even seen a cypress tree. I mean, they don't even know trees grow in water. I mean, that's how shocked they are when they come down here. And
I don't even know where Lena is.
Well, Lena, Louisiana is located in Natchitoches Parish, okay, but it's right above the Rapides parish line. Okay. So it's about, as the crow flies, about 23 miles north of Alexandria, Louisiana, which is in central Louisiana.
Central Louisiana.
And we happen to have a piece of property that has a fairly large private lake on it, and the lake has alligators in it, and so we get awarded alligator tags for the lake to harvest these beautiful animals, and we did it for many years on our own until we decided to turn it into a little corporate outing. Mm-hmm. And so folks come in on Friday and they leave on Sunday, but they stay in our camp facility on the property overlooking the lake, and we go out and we let them. It's a hands-on experience. I mean, I'm there to guide, but I'm not there to do it for them, you know. So we tell them what to do, and
how to
bait it.
Do you catch them? What's the term?
You trap them.
Trap them, okay.
Or you get them on a line. You catch them on a line, and then you harvest.
Or you run.
and then you run. Then you harvest them, and then we take him down to some of the facilities that are here, RTL Tannery, which mm-hmm. is right here in Lafayette. A lot of people don't know about this beautiful tannery is here. It's owned by Hermès, the mm-hmm. famous French fashion house.
That's an experience. And, beautiful.
They process about 40,000 alligators a year, and we bring all the alligators there to get processed, and so all the hunters get to keep their hides. Mm-hmm. And we have made some beautiful, beautiful products. I mean, everything from belts and wallets and boots to watch straps and humidors and gun cases.
A humidor. That would be a nice gift.
The humidor is gorgeous.
Not that I smoke cigars, but I know a lot of people that do.
Yeah, it's a beautiful gift. Yeah. But so we've had a lot of fun with the alligator hunting. It's been really cool. And when they come down, we treat them to a good Louisiana time. We'll have a cochon de lait, or we'll do last year we served stuffed pig, and we do etouffee and barbecued shrimp, and sometimes we'll do soft shell crabs, and we really make it a Louisiana experience when they come down here.
That's exciting. I had no idea you were doing that.
Yeah,
is it mainly out of state people though?
It is. Yeah, you know, Louisiana, it's funny because, you know, we're known as sportsman's paradise, mm-hmm. right? And as you know, growing up here, there's lots of hunting and lots of fishing opportunities. You can go down to a local gun store or academy or Walmart and get a license to really shoot anything that's in season, but you can't do that for alligators. You have to have alligator habitat on your land, and you have to be either an owner of that land or you're hunting public land. And if you hunt public land, you have to appeal to the state and give them a portion mm-hmm. of the money that you make from that alligator.
Are they endangered?
They're not endangered. Okay. In fact, the Louisiana,
I thought we had a lot of
the fact the Louisiana alligator program that was instituted back in the 70s has been a roaring success, and it's a completely renewable, sustainable resource here mm-hmm. in Louisiana. It's a multi-million-dollar industry, and it is. I promise you, there's an alligator in every pocket or hole in Louisiana. They are everywhere. I'm seeing them more on the side of the road now. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing them everywhere. They've come back. The program that the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries adopted, which a program was very similar in Florida, where they were collecting wild eggs, bringing them onto farms and alligator ranches. They harvest these eggs. They incubate these eggs. Mm-hmm. And then they hatch the eggs. And then they raise the alligators. And when the alligators get to 54 inches long, they have to, by law, release 12% back to the wild, which is the natural survival rate of wild alligators.
12%.
It mirrors it, uh-huh. except the difference is you're putting 54-inch alligators back in the wild, not not 4-inch alligators.
So they may not survive.
Yeah. So they get past a big hump. Uh-huh. So they're doing great. The program is wonderful. It's a great program. We participate in it. And so we're not depleting any of Louisiana's natural resources. And we have a chance to expose people to our culture. Yeah. And it's a big industry for a lot of people who work in the alligator industry.
Yes, it is.
It's a very big industry.
You know, I do want to say, as exciting and fun as that is, for people that don't know much about Louisiana, we don't really have alligators in our backyards or, you know, in the towns and all. This is in a rural setting.
Yeah.
By the rivers, by bayous. It's not like we have them.
Right.
Because I know I have had people ask me when I travel, do you have alligators in your backyard? You know, and I thought they were kidding, but I think there is a stereotype that
I think there
they're
is.
Everywhere, but this is a controlled setting.
Well, I think that some Louisiana storytellers maybe have promoted that story maybe to make us sound a little more interesting. I can't blame them. But if you live on a river or a bayou, there's a good chance that you might have an occasional alligator swim by or a moccasin curl up in a tree next to your garden.
And that is true.
You have to be mindful
of that. When you move there.
Exactly.
You know that there's
exactly.
Anywhere, there's also beautiful ducks and different wildlife.
That's true. But we have a lot of alligators at our lake, and we tell our friends to bring their dogs. You better watch your dog, because if he's not tethered, he may not come back.
Oh, God.
And that's a true thing. But we have a great time doing it. And it's a lot of fun. We enjoy it.
Yeah. So let me say the name again, JD. That is Burbee, B-O-U-R-B-E, Lake Hunting Club in Lena, Louisiana.
That's right.
So
and we have a website we have burbeelake.com. You can go and check it all out. We got lots of photos.
Yeah,
and
hope people go there and check that out.
If you're interested in that kind of thing. So I do that, and I also have a toy company on the
side. I was going to say, that's the Little Band Man Company.
Yeah.
Miniature collectible toy soldiers.
Yeah, it's kind of
what's
a funny
that up?
Story.
What's up with that?
My dad, you know, growing up in Louisiana, we'd go to New Orleans like a lot of families do down here for different reasons. And for years, I have two brothers, so three little boys. My dad would have to do something with us when we go to New Orleans, and we used to always go down the French Quarter. And there was a great little shop down there on Royal Street called Le Petit Soldier. And for 45 years, this guy had a beautiful little eccentric toy soldier shop in the French Quarter, and we used to always go there as children. And I remember years later taking a family trip to England, and we bought some toy soldiers there as a memento. And I guess it always stayed with me. I was living in Chicago working for the Bears, and I'd gone to a real high-end upscale toy store, and they had toy soldiers there one day. And I thought about it, and I thought, I wonder if anybody makes toy soldiers for college marching bands. I don't even know why that thought even came into my head, but it did. And I asked the shopkeep, and he goes, I don't know anything about that. And so I found out that there was a Toy Soldier magazine, of all things. I think there's a magazine for everything, by the way. There's a podcast for everything and a magazine for everything.
Right.
And I found, I wrote the editor of the magazine. And I said, look, I need to find a sculptor that I can contract to make some toy soldiers that have never been made before. And I want to do college marching bands.
This is such a great idea.
And this guy says, I have the perfect guy for you. He lives in Northern England. So I contacted him, and he agreed to do it. And we started doing college marching bands in miniature. So I started with Texas A&M because I knew a lot about the A&M band and the big tradition that goes along with the A&M band. Their motto is they've never lost a halftime. they're a fabulous military-esque style band. And we did the Texas A&M Fighting Texas Aggie Band.
The whole band, like people buy the whole band.
So we do like a 15 to 17 piece version of it, right? So we'll do one figure
with the drum
per
major.
Musical instrument. Yeah, drum major, clarinet, trumpet, you know, all the tuba, drums, cymbal, the whole deal. And so different bands are different sizes, but my bands range from 12 on the low end to 17 on the high end. We did A&M, then we did LSU, and since that time we've done Texas, Ohio State, Notre Dame, USC, Michigan, just finished Harvard. I just finished some stuff for West Point.
So people are buying these.
I've had some good Christmases. It's just been something very fun for me to do. It's a kind of an outlet for me, a creative outlet for me. The guy that I work with, my sculptor in England, he is so darn good at what he does. They're small pieces. They're 2 1/4 inches tall, and they're sculpted to detail. They're not just painted to detail.
Are they ceramic?
They're made of white metal.
Okay. So they don't break.
They could, but they don't break easily. Mm-hmm. But we get them all sculpted. We get them all cast and molded in England. It's a 100% British-made product, and it comes to us packaged. But there's a lot of back and forth before those bands come to life, so to speak.
So is Little Band I'm not saying it right. Little Band Man Company.
Yeah.
Is that based in New Iberia?
It's based in New Iberia, and we live online at littlebandman.com. And we're about we just started doing some research on some new bands. We're looking at doing Wisconsin.
You don't do Southern?
Tennessee. Like
the, I guess you have to go with the market.
We go with the market, but we're also looking for something interesting. We're going with Wisconsin's got a huge band tradition up there. They have a thing they do that's called the fifth quarter, where the band comes onto the field after the game
is over,
and the players have left the field, and there's about 45,000 fans that stick around for like another hour while they play on
the
field.
So there's a lot of potential customers
And we're going to do the University of Tennessee. We're looking at them right now. We're looking at Penn State, and there's a lot of, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. So it's very eccentric, very different. Not a lot of people know about that.
I didn't know. I'm glad to be able to promote it. You've also written, as I mentioned earlier, a line of children's books, starting with Born to Be a Tiger. And I think it might have had a different name when you first
Always Born to Be a Tiger. We years ago, right before I had my own children, actually, I was at an LSU football game, my alma mater, and I just noticed there was a lot of families, you know, with kids, little kids, you know,
I
two, 3 year olds, right?
When I was five, I mean, it's an experience being in
a It's a lifestyle thing, right? It's what we do. And it's not just an LSU thing. It's a Southern football thing, right? So we're at the LSU game and everyone's got their kids and
their little cheerleader.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so I thought, you know, whose job is it to teach these kids, you know, the cheer or what to get at halftime and how to tailgate or how to throw the football? Or where's the mascot or where does the band come? And so I thought, well, if there was a book, kind of a playbook, so to speak, that a father could or a mother could read to their kids about game day, wouldn't that be convenient and useful? So I wrote this book called Born to Be a Tiger, and it's about a father bringing his son to his first LSU football game. And it was a great book, and we've sold a lot of copies. I mean, we've sold close to 30,000 copies of
gosh.
It. It's a lot.
You can go to Amazon and get any of your books.
We were in 180 stores at one time in Louisiana, and then of course spurred the idea of, well, what if we did a book for Texas and Texas A&M? So we've done Born to Be an Aggie, Born to Be a Longhorn. Mm-hmm. We've done some others, and then we had to kind of put it off to the side, and we haven't brought any new titles to market lately. But it's been, of all the things that I've done, and I feel like I've done a lot at 48, writing books has been one of the most rewarding things I've done. I've had more people come up to me and say, oh, we've read your book, or we've got the book, or my dad used to read the book to me, and I was like the book. They say it like that.
And
like
I know, whichever one it is.
And it's really rewarding. It's been cool to have a book out, and I've encouraged a lot of people that have ideas that, you know, if you got a good book idea, you ought to follow through with it.
I think I was first introduced to you by Cherie Hebert, our mutual friend with BBR Creative, and Cherie's been one of my mentors, and I want to tell you, when I think about you, JD, I think about an actor. You do things. You don't just talk about it. You actually execute. And I want to commend you for that. And I've always wanted to write books, and it's still in my head. And you had that idea, and you put it on paper. You got the illustrator. You published it. And Cherie told me about you. And this was, you know, a while back, I'm sure in the early, maybe the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
And you're the person that doesn't just think about the little soldiers or the marketing piece or whatever. You execute, and it's something that makes you stand out.
If I'm motivated, I'm going to do it.
Like, you're not going to just think about it.
Like right now, we're in the throes of a new project for our pecan company, where we want to open up. We're thinking about opening up a pie bar, where you can come in and get a cup of coffee and a piece of pie.
It's a great idea.
Yeah,
it's for locals and tourists.
Locals and tourists and beautiful downtown Main Street, New Iberia, in the historic district. And, you know, we're going through with it. I mean, we're gonna see this thing to the end, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be different. It's going to be new. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I get my juices flowing when I get involved in something new. It's
no walnut pies.
No walnut pies. There'll be no walnuts in there. No walnut pies. No pistachio pies. We're going to be selective.
Only the best pecans.
That's right.
Which they are.
That's right. No other nuts.
Yeah. Anything else in the works? I mean, this
no,
is more.
I mean,
much more
raising
I
kids,
expect.
You know, and just,
that's
you know,
full-time
I have a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old, and they're going into sixth and fifth grade, respectfully. Mm-hmm. And we got one of them going to a new school this year, so that'll be a
transition.
Yeah, a transition. Yeah. But we're looking forward to it. And we still have a couple of weeks left of summer. And we're looking forward to that. And then it's just full board into the pecan season starting in September. And it's always an exciting year. It's always an exciting time of the year. You know, it's a little nerve-wracking because you hope that all the things you've been doing for marketing and preparation for the last 8 months is going to yield the kind of results that you want. You're never quite sure. I get always really wound up in October. But then, man, November hits and the orders start coming in. And we're trying to do a lot of new marketing in New Orleans and like the Lake Charles area with the big boom that they've had with the industrial building of new projects. And Lake Charles is huge, over $100 billion of new projects in Lake Charles. And we're going to put our toe in the proverbial water there in Houston and try to start mining some new opportunities there too. So it's, the business is growing. We're trying to position ourselves as a national pecan provider, and I think we'll be able to do that over time, but we're taking it slow and kind of moving out of the of the South Louisiana area a little bit.
I have no doubt you're going to be a huge success.
Well, I think I appreciate that very much. So it's fun.
I know it is. You make everything fun though, JD.
Well, who knew pecans would be that much fun?
I know. So as we wind this interview down, I really would like you to talk about why you're here. You know, obviously you could live anywhere in the country and still have your family business that's here. You could have the Cane River Pecan, could be run locally here, and you could be managing it from somewhere else. You chose to come back and stay home in Lafayette, and we're talking about your business in New Iberia, but your base is Lafayette, Louisiana.
No doubt about it. And not only Lafayette, you know, my wife and I chose to live in a part of town of Lafayette that was established.
Central.
It's very close to downtown. We really enjoy taking advantage of a lot of that downtown experiences. We are a 6 minute bike ride downtown. We all have bikes. My kids, my wife and I, we all take our bikes downtown all the time. You know, it's not uncommon to have date night and go to Pamplona for dinner and go to the ACA for a concert and come down here for festival and or any other festival for that matter. We love that. Just last night we were downtown at the ACA for an event. But we really have enjoyed living not only in Lafayette, but in the part of Lafayette that we're in. We feel like we're just completely immersed in the culture. And there is something very unique about the culture here. It exists throughout South Louisiana, but it's really evident and here in Lafayette for whatever reason. And it's a combination of all the things that we've spoken about, the music, the food, the people's you know, willingness to open up and to be friendly and all the things that go along with that.
Right. And it's a hotbed of entrepreneurs. People like you
really
can
is.
Exist here and be nationally known, but living here in Lafayette. And
it is. We're fortunate. You know, there's kind of this, everyone talks about this kind of the wildcat mentality. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it comes from, you look around the oil field industry, that it's so part of our culture here in Southwest Louisiana, the oil field, and seeing folks go out and invent this and patent that, and they have this business that's associated with the oil and gas industry, and you kind of get the fever, so to speak. You kind of feel like, well, if he can do it, I can do it, kind of a thing.
And they encourage you.
It may not be in oil and gas, but you feel like you can do it, you know,
whether
it's Kip Schumacher doing what he's doing or Matt Stuller doing what he's doing, or these guys are notorious in their fields. They have nothing to do with oil and gas.
But they're here in Lafayette, Louisiana.
But they're here in Lafayette, Louisiana.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think everyone likes the familiarity. You know, I've run into Matt Stuller at Walmart. I ran into Kip Schumacher just the other night. He was at Sycamore Point, Louisiana, just out drinking a glass of wine. So I think there's a certain familiarity that we all love about this town. I think when I think of Lafayette, I think about the most perfect size town. It's not too big where you get kind of lost in the crowd, but it's certainly not too small. Well, everyone knows your business. It's kind of just that right size where you can go somewhere and see just enough people to make you feel like you're at home and you know your community.
Yeah.
And I like that about Lafayette very much.
Yeah, I love it here too.
And there's a pride about Lafayette right now that I'm seeing in the last 10 years. You know, you see a lot of people flying the Acadiana flag or having an Acadiana license plate on their car like I do. And it's kind of their way of supporting the region. You know, it's kind of like I'm in it.
Right.
You know, I'm in with 2 feet. And I love that about this area.
Yeah.
I do. It's unique.
It's definitely unique. And it's having grown up in Baton Rouge, as much as I loved growing up there, this is home. You know, this is a unique culture here. And it's a gem. not only in our state, but I think in throughout South Louisiana and in the region. Mm-hmm. So just want to thank you for all you do again, and for sharing your story. Have I even asked about all the companies you have?
Yeah, no, that's it. I'm not taking on any more. It was one little small one we thought about a while back. It's still percolating.
We'll get you back whenever you do that. But I'd like to thank J.D. Regard for being our guest today. He's Chief Nut Officer of the Cane River Pecan Company and the author of Born to Be a Tiger and so many other books. And as we know now, managing owner of Burby Lake Hunting Club in Lima.
Got it.
And owner of the Little Band Man Company. And most importantly to me, my friend. And
thank you, Jan.
Supporter. So thank you for
Absolutely.
Being here today.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And I'm Jan Swift. I'd like to thank AOC Community Media and our producer, William McFarlane, for making this show possible. We're taping right here in the Rosa Parks Transportation Center in downtown Lafayette. I'd like to thank you for listening. We have a Facebook page, Discover Lafayette, and working on our website. It'll be discoverlafayette.net. And hope you'll listen to more of our podcasts. You can find these on iTunes, Stitcher, and any other Google Drive, any other medium that you subscribe to podcasts. We're now launched. So thank you for joining us. This is Jan Swift with Discover Lafayette.
The views and opinions expressed on this or any program on the AOC Podcast Network do not reflect the views and opinions of Lafayette Consolidated Government, Cox Communications, LUS Fiber, AOC Community Media, its board of directors, or its staff. To learn more about becoming a community media producer, visit us on the web at aocinc.org.